So last summer, my family and I found ourselves driving from Chicago to Indianapolis to visit some relatives. Now, it's a fairly dull drive. Northern Indiana is flat land, and the trees often block the view if there were any view to be had. And you get quite proficient at reading road signs, ones for restaurant chains specializing in fried chicken, family-owned roadside motels whose beds have tissue paper, thin sheets from decades of washing, I know from experience, and ice cream stands touting the presence of real cows on the premises. And we saw this sign, too. Great big billboard right by the road. Now, at first, I thought I wasn't reading it right, but it's pretty unmistakable. And I figured the billboard meant what it said, unless hell was a new chain of restaurants. I must say the mind reels when you start thinking about slogans for that restaurant. When I had internet access, I looked this billboard up. And sure enough, Indiana isn't the only place where these signs are found. States like Ohio and Kentucky have them too. Clearly, some people are worried that the belief in hell has slipped away. Now, as a Unitarian Universalist, I find this especially interesting. After all, Universalism is based on the notion that a loving God would not condemn anyone to an eternity of punishment. Universalism says that divine love is eternal, powerful, and always available. The concept of hell simply doesn't make sense alongside that idea. So in the United States, it was someone named Hosea Ballou who helped define the theology that popularized Universalism, even as it was simultaneously perceived as heretical and dangerous. In his groundbreaking theological work, A Treatise on Atonement, Ballou wrote, "There is nothing in heaven above nor in the earth beneath that can do away with sin but love." Ballou and other Universalist preachers were a contrast to the stuffy, elite Unitarian preachers of the time. These Universalists headed out on horseback, evangelizing in language accessible to all people. And for a time in the mid-1800s, Universalism was the fastest growing and, briefly, the largest Christian denomination in the entire United States. Now, according to Richard Trudeau, Universalism had four major components that made it so distinct from and appealing compared to traditional understandings of Christianity. One, God is love. Christianity of the time was dominated by Calvinism, which was marked by hellfire and damnation. And this sermon this morning is probably as close as I'll get to a hellfire sermon. Universalism was an emotional reaction against this, a declaration that no loving God would damn God's children. Two, no one is condemned. God's love knows no bounds. It is universal. Salvation is not reward for good behavior, but simply an expression of God's love. Three, the way to be happy is to do good. The loving universalist God of the time wanted people to be happy in this life, and the way that they were supposed to do that was by treating each other well. And then finally, four, there are sources of religious truth outside the Judeo-Christian tradition. So the thinking went that if God loves everybody, then that means even people who have never heard of Abraham or Jesus or Moses are loved, and therefore the religions that they founded, like Buddhism, are also valid ways. And so why these hell is real billboards now at this moment in time? I think it's partially because mainstream Christianity has started to catch up with Universalism once again. Pastor Rob Bell's mega church is one such place that has wrestled with this idea of Universalism. In his best-selling book, Love Wins, arguably an unintentional love letter to Universalism, Bell writes, "Often the people most concerned about others going to hell when they die seem less concerned about the hells on earth right now. In reading all of the passages in which Jesus used the word hell, what is so striking is that people believing the right or wrong things is not his point. He's not talking about beliefs as we think of them. He's talking about anger and lust and indifference. He's talking about the state of his listeners' hearts, how they conduct themselves, how they interact with their neighbors, about the kind of effect they have on the world." So that's Rob Bell's take on it. So here's this mega church pastor, someone we would typically associate with a type of conservative Christian theology who is suggesting that if hell is to be found anywhere, it's most likely here on earth and of our own making. Love wins, as its title affirms, gestures over and over to love, divinely inspired but human enacted, as being of utmost importance. Now, Bell may not call himself a universalist, but there are many who do, including the 1,000 people who left his megachurch because of these so-called heretical views. Likewise, universalist ideas have been sprouting up in other megachurches, not to mention mainline denominations that have moved away from talk of hellfire altogether. Now, the objection to both Ballou in his time and ministers like Bell today has to do with the idea that if there is no hell, what motivation is there for humanity to do good? Christians worried then, and they worry now, that without the threat of hell, people will lack motivation not to steal, kill, rape, and otherwise abuse their fellow human beings. In fact, in several states, I don't know if you knew this, universalists were actually forbidden from serving on juries or even giving testimony at trials because there were concerns they lacked any motivation to be honest. This kind of anxious thinking is behind these hell is real billboards that have found their way to the roadside all the way now in this year. So what does this mean for us as Unitarian Universalists? Well, I can think we can safely assume there probably isn't going to be a sudden merging of UU churches and mega churches across the country. I don't see that happening. After all, while shades of universalism may have be coloring some of their theologies, universalism in the UU church has evolved another 150 plus years since then. So what does universalism mean for us nowadays? Now, certainly some of us don't find God language particularly useful, and even more of us don't find the idea of hell worth our time, not even the idea of arguing whether there is or isn't a hell. Yet, while universalism's radical quality may have been rooted in its rejection of hell, there is still much theological fodder in its ideas and evolution to be useful for us today. Ballou wrote at the time, "Free from the powerful concerns about salvation and damnation, one is free. Knowing that his own happiness is connected with the happiness of his fellow men, which induces him to do justly and to deal mercifully with all men." And of course, he's speaking in the gendered language of his time. In other words, we do good not because we are worried about punishment, but because we recognize our connection to one another. And we tap into that love for our fellow human beings in living out our lives in ways that lift each other up. Whether we embrace notions of God in today's world or not, this idea of connection is still useful in that it encourages us to work for justice, to put the concerns of others before selfish concerns. And we are bound together by love, something vital to remember in this polarized time, a polarization that has arguably placed those in power who we would not want there. We are bound together in love. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke of this kind of love, saying it's not the sentimental something that we talk about. Love is creative. When you rise to the level of love of its great beauty and power, you seek only to defeat evil systems. Individuals who happen to be caught in that system, you love, but you seek to defeat the system. This is a very universalist message, and it's no surprise because both Dr. King and Coretta Scott King attended Unitarian and Universalist churches over the years. Really interesting to learn about their relationship with our faith traditions. And what King is affirming when he talks about love is this notion of worth and dignity of every person, that some may do wrong and will do wrong. They do so, though, as part of a system, and that we still have to love them even as we dismantle those oppressive systems. I think this is our greatest challenge in living out universalism today, holding on to this idea that everyone is worthy of love. There are personalities on parade in our culture right now, on our televisions, our computer screens, in political parties and positions of power who are masters of populism. They speak to people's wounds, call them marginalized, tell them they know how they feel, and promise to fight a common enemy. Many of us struggle to feel anything but contempt for those who use those tactics and for the people who are swayed by them. Yet universalism, our tradition, says they are worthy of love. That doesn't excuse or condone their actions. In fact, if their actions infringe on the well-being of others, then we are called to react. But from a universalist perspective, that doesn't change their core worthiness. Universalism never said we were perfect or that we might not do evil. It simply said we were human, flaws and all, and that means we are worthy of love. And sometimes love is tough love in a tough world. Not too long ago, I had dinner with Tandeka, one of our premier Unitarian Universalist theologians, someone whose own contemporary theological study taps into both our universalist traditions and neuroscience, a field that has been recently dubbed neurotheology, which delves into explaining the effect of religious beliefs through understanding the science of the brain. Dinner with Tandeka is both a joyful and an intense affair, marked by conversation that suddenly goes very deep. Be ready if you ever have dinner with her. Once the main course was gone and the candle on the table had half burnt down, it was clear from the conversation with her that she'd spent a great deal of time studying the wounds of the United States, its racism, the economic disparities that continue to stratify society, and what she calls the emotional abuse that infuses everything from our workplaces to our public arenas. The broad solution she proposes is one that Unitarian Universalism is uniquely positioned to do, to love beyond belief, meaning we have to learn to love one another across the dividing lines of identity, whether religious, cultural, racial, ethnic, or political. In Tandeka's eyes, I saw the awareness of how profoundly difficult this is. Yet one thing she's certain of is that we human beings are connected at both our core, by both our loving and our wounding. That connects all of us. And Reverend John Morehouse writes of her work, "Beyond our individual beliefs is a common love that seeks to save lives from the pain of loss, the bewilderment of estrangement, and the dulling mediocrity of finding meaning in a fractured world." What we do with our beliefs, according to Tandeka, is love beyond belief, a modern interpretation of universalism. While universalism traditionally acknowledged our dependence on God or nature, Tandeka has updated this idea to include our dependence on the realities of science. In other words, our brains work best when we are in loving relationships with our fellow humans. They don't work as well when we are not. When our brains aren't working well, the social fabric begins to fall apart. We love, therefore, not because it's some abstraction that pleases a god. We love because it is truly necessary to our survival. So when things are pretty good, like many of us have experienced at one time or another in the United States, it's easy to love across differences. Our differences may not even seem that marked or that important. We agree to disagree, as the common saying goes. But when we are deeply divided, loving across differences is profoundly hard. Jack Panksepp is a pioneering neuroscientist in the study of the neural mechanisms of emotion. So his work shows us that when the molecular structures produced by the brain that create our feelings of social solidarity and love are compromised, our bonds with others will remain surface, shallow. Now, this concurs with other recent brain studies that show that supportive forms of social interaction create brain chemistries that encourage deeper social bonding. And what Tandeka suggests is that the problems in our world today, our nation, stem from lack of connection to one another. And the resulting effects on the emotional centers of the brain stunts human ability to feel empathy. It's a vicious cycle. And we see it on display in those strident voices present in the current national public arena. So universalism, with its idea of loving beyond belief, they were on to something all those years ago, something worthy of exploration by today's scientific methods. And we, as keepers of the universalist tradition and its evolution, have a particular call to consider what it means to apply universalism's deep sense of love to the complexities and problems of our modern world. How do we love beyond belief when there are so many who seem unlovable to us? That's the question, right? So here's one response, also found on a billboard. Maybe that's your answer, right? I suggest that we recognize that to others on the other side of one of the divisions we see in our nation, we appear just as unlovable. And yet we know we are not, right? We know we are worthy of love. I suspect they feel the same way about themselves. And so have we enough faith in the universalist side of our tradition to love across divisions? Do we have any idea of what that means beyond an abstraction? So I think it's about three things, ultimately. First, we have to pay attention. What are people saying? What are they doing? Why might they be doing that? It's about listening deeply to the cries of other human hearts. Remember, we're connected by our love and our wounding, and figuring out what is at the root of those cries. Universalism sees commonalities in the human experience. Can we? Two, we need to build opportunities for communication across differences. Now, some of us have stopped all communication with people who used to be important in our lives. We have. And maybe that was the right decision for you, but I also offer the possibility that if we cannot learn to navigate difference on a micro scale, we may struggle with doing it on a macro scale. So how can we maintain our sanity, health, and well-being while still allowing people in our lives who think differently than us? If universalism says no one is damned, is it useful or even ethical for us to damn anyone? To answer that, I'd like us to consider for a moment Venezuela. The economist Andres Miguel Rondon saw the decades-long mistakes made there in fighting populism. What he says is what wasn't needed there were any more logical arguments or dismissive rejections of foolish people. There was plenty of that. What was needed was, quote, people who go into others' territory not for a speech or rally, but for a game of dominoes or to dance salsa, to show they were Venezuelans too, that they weren't just dour scolds and they could hit a baseball, could tell a joke that landed, that they could break the tribal divide, come down off the billboards, and show that they were real. That's what the universalist preachers did back in the day out there on horseback. They got among the people and quieted their fears with a message of love. And three, we have to recognize that it's time for many of us to commit to something theologically. By theology, I'm talking about a system that helps us make meaning of our lives. Every human being has one, whether they name it as such or not. In a UU setting, the choice of what precisely that is up to you. But this is not a time to believe in nothing. We need to each find a belief system, whether it's rooted in humanity, the natural world, or divinity, but something that gives us hope and joy and provokes our sense of wonder. When we do these things, will we be able to love beyond belief? Maybe. It will nonetheless be challenging. I know that. But this is our best bet to position ourselves in a nation where we can be appropriately responsive to its changing needs. As Dr. King said, this love will not be soft and sentimental. It will likely be difficult, and across the divisions we have before us, it may require more of ourselves than we have ever given. We don't know what's ahead, but we know it's worth trying. We talked about failure last week because there will be times, there have been recent times, when we will and have failed to achieve what we set out to do. But if we measure our success in our willingness to try to love, to live into our universalist legacy, then I see the potential for great success ahead. Let us love our way into that success. Love beyond belief. Love beyond division. Love beyond today that invites us into a better tomorrow.